I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If we hope to survive in this digital age, we have to think critically about the messages we consume. Someone created those messages for a reason. Let's find out why. Sometimes we just have to ask, what the media? I'm Megan Lynch, virtual consumer editor at KMOX Radio. In this episode, economy of words.
If you want people to remember what is important to you, you have to make this change.
I talk with Jim VandeHei, co-founder, CEO, and chairman of news site Axios and co-author of the book Smart Brevity, a guidebook for concise communication.
As I was reading through this, I thought of a former news director who used to talk to us about short declarative sentences. But when we talk about smart brevity, it seems like there's a lot more to that. So tell us about the philosophy behind this.
Yeah, so Smart Brevity, which is the name of the book, is essentially the fundamental premise of a media company called Axios that we've created. And it was built because in the internet era, with everyone so distracted, it was clear that we were going to need to know a lot about more topics, but that we were going to have to do it more efficiently. And our solution was smart brevity, both the smart and the brevity part. Smart meaning intelligent content for intelligent people, but then brief, like how can you be as efficient as possible with content? The data is indisputable. Most people are skimming and scanning. You're lucky to get someone's attention with a news article or an email that you send. If you can keep them for 18 seconds, it's a miracle in this new distracted era. And so the idea was, okay, if that's the reality, how can we as a media company, and now how could anybody at home, communicate more efficiently, communicate more effectively, really distill what it is they want people to remember in as few of words, as strong of words, as memorable of words, give people the context for what they're trying to communicate, and then achieve what is the ultimate objective for all of us, which is to get people to pay attention to what we think matters most. And it requires a pretty radical retooling of how you communicate. And I think most people haven't come to grips with that. I think most companies have not come to grips with that, but people are and will. And this is hopefully a really helpful, easy to read guide for people, whether you're a student, a teacher, a preacher, or a business leader, to really learn how to communicate in this new era much more effectively and efficiently.
You mentioned the word context, and that was going to be one of my questions, because I know for us, for what we do in radio, we have to keep it brief, but you still have to have that context. How do you manage that when you're trying to be brief?
Yeah, I think what we say, it's short, not shallow. This idea that you can only have context by dumping a pile of words on people is just wrong. You can give context very concisely. Like the architecture that we teach people is this idea of, you know, distill the one or two things that matter most, say it as clearly and like a human as possible, and then do a why it matters, the context. Like, why are you telling me this now? What is the context? And then if you need like supporting evidence or to go deeper, stack that in order of importance, maybe break it into bullets or numbers, things that are that trigger the brain to think and to remember it more clearly. And if you do those things, you can convey the context. You don't need thousands and thousands of words to convey context. The problem is that we were taught in school, you got to write a 1,000-word paper or a 10-page paper. Or if you're an author, the bigger the book, the smarter you are. Or an academic, the longer that academic paper, clearly the more research you've done. None of that's true. We're either showing off or we're often hiding the fact that we haven't really thought that clearly about what it is we're trying to say, and we're disguising it or camouflaging it in that pile of words. And so you really have to fundamentally rethink writing and communications. You have to stop writing for yourself. You have to stop being self-indulgent, and you have to think about the person you're writing for or writing to. You want to be respectful of their intelligence, respectful of their time, make it as efficient and as pleasing and as memorable as possible. And if you can make that change, I think you'll see almost a big difference in people remembering what you have to say. Because most people have not retooled their communication for an era where you have constant distraction and information consumption is done on a mobile phone.
Jim, do you think a lot of times, because we have gotten used to these shorter forms of communication, that we are zoning out if something is too long because it just doesn't grab our attention anymore, maybe the way it would have in decades past?
Absolutely. The data on this is indisputable. Like, most people spend at most 18 seconds on an email or a story or a piece of content that comes across their screen. They're looking for cues about whether or not they should stay there. Often long is a do not read sign because people are like, I'm exhausted. I don't have time. I have a meeting in 10 minutes. So if you can be short and efficient, in especially with information that can be conveyed short and efficiently, you're much more likely to keep the person and keep their attention. And if you stack the information in a humanly written way, like where you're not using SAT words and not using acronyms and not writing like you think you're smarter than they are, but writing like you would sort of talk to them if you're having a beer at a bar, you'll see a big difference in people remembering. But you have to go to, it's a war out there. It's a war for attention. And as a species, we're not great at multitasking. We're terrible when we get distracted at refocusing. And that's why with the book, we're trying to walk you through just the realities. You might not like it. A lot of people, like I'm sure critics, like journalists probably hate the book because we're telling them to do the opposite of what they were taught to do. But I'm telling you, if you want people to remember what is important to you, you have to make this change.
Talk to us about how you structure that message, because there's a great graphic in the book that shows exactly how this is broken down.
Yeah, you know, when we started Axios, the media company, we came up with a sort of smart brevity format, which is a very short, sharp headline. And for people who aren't in media, think of it as your subject line or the text that you're sending to a friend in a conversation you want them to engage in. Be very purposeful about that being really short, sharp, and provocative, because you're asking them, you're trying to give them a signal that this is worth their time, and then distill into one crisp, clear sentence. What is the most important thing I have to say? What is the newest, freshest, coolest thing I have to say? And say it in one clean sentence. And then give them we call it a why it matters. We do it the second graph of almost every story, why it matters. What is the context of this new, exciting, interesting thing you want me to pay attention to? And then the architecture for us is go deeper. If there's a cue that you want to go deeper into this conversation or into this story, then click deeper into it and then stack the information in order of importance, because with each paragraph, you're losing an increasing percentage of the people who you're hoping would stick around for it. And you just have to adapt to that reality. Do I love it? Do I wish people would read every word I write if I write 1,500 words? I do. But I actually looked at the data and found that, I'm lucky if I can keep someone for 100 or 200 words. Well, if it's 100 or 200 words, make it the most memorable, sharpest, clearest 100 or 200 words they're going to read today.
From a reader or audience perspective, how do we know if we're getting all the information we need when things do have brevity?
I think most people are pretty smart and can figure out if they decide that they want to go deeper into a subject. I think if the writer's doing a good job, they can provide links or they can stack the information after they've told you what's new and what's important and why it matters. Certain things at work require a level of depth, but break it up, make it easy, make it conversational, prioritize it, maybe number the points or put the points in bullet points. There are things that you can do as the creator of the content to make it much more memorable and much more engaging. And it's not, you don't want to be brief for brief sake. Like it's actually a hell of a lot harder to be really efficient than it is to be long-winded. right? And so like the idea is make sure that you sort of trust the source you're getting it from. But then as the creator, just make sure that you're being as respectful of that person's time. One of the reasons that we called our company Axios, which is Greek for worthy, is we really wanted to be worthy of people's intelligence. We wanted to be worthy of people's time. And I think if you as a communicator in your personal life or your business life apply that and start to really try to be respectful of people's time and people's intelligence, it really reframes how you think about communicating. We did it just as a way to get people to pay attention to content. I run my entire company on Smart Brevity now. I write 5 items in Smart Brevity every Sunday to 550 employees so they know what's new in different parts of the company and why it matters to them. And it's had a real magical effect on our culture, on productivity, on people understanding what we're doing and why we're doing it. And I just think the more that people are overwhelmed with information, the clearer that we as the communicators need to be.
How much do you find yourself maybe when you're on social media, like an Instagram or a Twitter, picking apart those messages and thinking how you could have expressed this better in the characters that were allowed?
The places that are most egregious, there's several of them. Any academic paper is wholly written for the academic and maybe a couple of other academics. If the idea is to do that much research to come up with some kind of conclusion and then to write in a language no one would ever speak or no one would ever read, seems like a terrible waste of time. You see this with scientists all the time. You see it in business, the amount of words that leaders and managers are pumping out and then hiding on an intranet and thinking that a busy employee would take the time to read it. I see it every day. And like, it's often horrifying. And I'm always looking at it going, man, if you would just, I can see the one point you're trying to make. If you wouldn't have made that and said, this is why it matters, people would have remembered it. But instead you might as well have taken whatever you wrote and dropped it into the middle of a forest because no one's ever going to see it, read it, hear it, or care about it. And that's where the big shift has to take place. And it would just have been cool because we have the Austin school system now uses Smart Brevity, and some of the biggest companies in the world now communicate in Smart Brevity. We talked to preachers who are applying this to their sermons, trying to be sharper with what they're trying to tell their congregation. I love that. I love to see people adapting. And there's that, as we were writing the book, the Pope did a speech and he talked about, he didn't use the word Smart Brevity, but he talked about how he was telling priests that you're too long-winded, like your 40-minute homilies need to be 10 minutes. And he joked that he thought there'd be a big backlash, but the people who were happiest were the nuns, because he said they're the people who had to sit through our torture. And he was joking-ish, but like the idea is like in almost every setting, you can be a lot more efficient with the way you're trying to say the things you're trying to say, and you have a much higher chance that it's going to stick.
That's Jim Vandehei of Axios and co-author of the book Smart Brevity. What the Media is produced by Odyssey St. Louis from the studios of KMOX Radio. I'm Megan Lynch. Our executive producer is Beth Coughlin. We invite you to visit KMOX.com for more on our media literacy project.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality Gaze,
let's love.